Okay.
So to play this game, there are different phases of play. I will explain each of them as we go through them. But the first is the opening credits. We have an sports anime style opening credit sequence. So what we hear as an audience is a metal song. There's a lot of energy. There are a lot of drums. There are heavy guitars. We see the sky, and then there are pulsing flashes of images of athletes putting on gloves, buckling up harnesses, holding various weapons, and birds taking flight as the logo for Sky Joust like zooms into the screen, and the music hits this like heavy crescendo, and then we break into scenes from an anime opener. So what I will ask each of you to do is describe your character and describe the tableau or scene that we see of your character that communicates a little bit of their personality, ambition, and struggle.
When you see Skeen, in that sort of standard, things are sort of happening in a weird space opening for an anime. Not much of a background, but just standing haughtily over one of the other characters on one of the other teams, and just smirking pushes them, and they sort of fall backwards, arms out, doing that, like, fall into a void.
Oh, is this like falling away from the camera? Like, we see from that character's perspectives, we see our arms flailing as you disappear.
Yeah.
As we're swallowed by a void. I love that.
Skeen is a 17-year-old athletic young man, buzzed on the sides, and then blonde hair going down the middle, and he is pristine in his look. Everything is crisp, clean, pressed. It is easy to tell that he is both rich and kind of concerned about his look.
That's great.
I think we sort of like have a screen wipe, and we are then transported to like a very bright sort of like looking up at the sky. There are, I think, like flower petals, like rose petals flowing mixed with like red cardinal feathers, and we seem to like, we're panning down, and then we sort of pan down and we land on a very flowy, very dainty person sort of doing a dance routine, kind of like windmills of the hands. We see sort of a brown-skinned, kind of tall, lanky, sort of black daisy woman. They got their hair tied back into like a bun, and they have these fans that they are like waving into their routine, and it's very elegant. It's very beautiful. The feathers and the petals are like flowing around them. The camera moves closer and closer and closer until it's like a very tight shot of their face, and they put the feather sort of in front of their mouth, and everything is very soft. And then they flip the fan around, and then somehow in flipping it 180 degrees, the fan like, now you can clearly see blades on the fan, mm-hmm. and everything that was soft and delicate about Jade Wolf's face suddenly becomes very pointy and maniacal, and then they move the fan in front of the camera again, and then we're somewhere else.
Yes. Yes.
So Gull is basically like a little living lightning bolt of a person. He's jagged and crooked all the way from his wild lightning bolty hair down to the tips of his shoes, never stands up straight and never visibly sits down. Dresses more or less like a drug dealer crossed with a mad scientist. Also, he's only 15. He's new. He has lightning bolt imagery worked in throughout his outfit as well, including the temples of his glasses having little cracked bolts along the sides and so on. Here, we see him briefly adjusting his hair, and as this is happening, we are tightly zoomed in on his face, and then it starts to slowly pull back. As it does so, He keeps doing little bits of detail. This is going fairly quickly. It's just a slow zoom. Mm-hmm. Adjusts his hair. He checks a notebook and slaps it into a chest pocket. Takes a flask and drops it into one of the belt strap loops on his belts. And the whole time it's established that he's standing in an attention until it pulls back just far enough to realize that he's standing on the back of Drift, his hummingbird, and that he doesn't use a seated saddle. He's always standing. And
nice.
Just as you realize he's standing, we get a rack focus that shows that the up until now generally indistinct but moving background is actually the stands packed with audience, and it's all upside down. He's been hovering upside down in place the entire time. He flashes a quick grin as he pushes the glass bridge up to get that anime shine moment and then drops out of frame still upside down.
God, yes, perfect. Then I feel like there is a flash of like the team standing together, and then a big like kind of red and black collection of shadows looms behind them, and you see like that anime shine on like what would be eyes or glasses. I mean, you know, it's probably like little glass reflections to be eyes, but the light shifts a little bit and the silhouettes become like more shadowy figures, and these are all of the people that have control or influence over your lives looming over you. Some of them might have monocles, some of them might be actually wearing glasses, others are looking through with opera glasses. Perhaps
stroking
there is like goggles for you know, whomever might be part of the brewing company. But like all of these figures are looming over you, and they're extremely dark and imposing, and like the music pulses, and I feel like that image shatters like around you a little bit, and the team picture of you looks just like that much more unhinged. Then we see flashes of like elegance and wealth being thrown around, and like the lamentations of your enemies as they are all like wailing in defeat and in frustration at the soaring comet that becomes this lance, which like strikes through something that looks like a meteor or a planetoid but turns out to be an olive, and that becomes the Jolly Gander's logo. And then the, you know, sky joust like music sort of levels out, and we just see the logo of the Jolly Ganders over this background, and our opening comes to an end.
Sick.
Perfect.
Love it. Print it. Do it.
Now we are up to daily life / event. So basically, you're each going to be doing two scenes. One of these scenes is going to be like a scene with dialogue that will be you and another character, or maybe even an all play where it is all of your characters. I also have the ability to frame a scene and another scene, which I'll get to. But like, you know, it is a dialogue scene. It is a scene between characters. Typically, this is when troubles come up. But otherwise, like, these are things that tell us, the audience, about your characters, what your personality is like, what your goals and desires are like. And these scenes are leading up to you in the tournament. So that's the first kind, a scene with dialogue. The next is a vignette. This could be like a training montage. The idea is there is no dialogue. This is just a description of something. It could even like literally be just your character, you know, sitting on a rooftop, gazing mournfully over a city as rain falls. You know, it's something that tells us a little bit about your character and what they're going through and how they are preparing to go into this competition. What we're looking to establish as, you know, players is these are opportunities to build up your spirit and fight. So they're opportunities to explore those traits and conditions and introduce troubles for each other so that headed into this match, you have a lot of dramatic narrative weight kind of bearing down on your characters.
Yeah, I feel like there's a maybe an establishing shot of like a, I think it's like maybe 2-3 streets down from where the Jolly Gander's like practice. There is a very serene, like pleasant shot of a bunch of dancers in a studio, kind of like doing their thing, like they're warming up, and Jade is being sort of like dropped off. What's a normal mode of transportation that's not a bird?
Okay, well, I mean, so here's the thing, Tyler. With this universe, like we can have a cart is
great,
pulled
done.
By
rickshaw,
a
done.
Bird.
Done.
Okay. But like, if there's wealth in the picture, like, you know, this is probably a flightless or a bird that doesn't fly very often, but it looks like cool and fancy, like a roadrunner or something. Mm-hmm. That
very
is like
chocobo-y.
Exactly. Chocobo energy.
I like the idea of Wind Rider Island being literal, and that there's like there's monorails and stuff, but they actually have sails as their power mechanic.
I do like the idea of a monorail with sails. Let's add that. And like Wind Rider Island being this kind of semi-tropical, opulent artistic paradise, like they've got the dosh to have a monorail system installed. But yeah, it depends on the energy that you want for Jade's like transportation. If this is a private cart, then this is a private cart.
No, I think it's like maybe a private cart on the monorail. It's like it's their own reserved like section or seats.
I like that.
And so I think it's just Jade is very, very pleasantly just like saying like thank you and goodbye to their dad, and is like be sure to practice well, dear. Is like of course, dad, of course, daddy, of course. I'm gonna make you proud. We're going to regionals coming up, and I think that dance is really my thing. It's my calling. It's my passion, because you know that's what you signed me up for, and I appreciate that, Daddy. So I'll see you later. And Jade kind of leaves the monorail. It kind of goes off into the distance, and then Maxwell Grief, Jade's friend, kind of like strides up behind her, and it's like, all right, you ready to go to work? It's like, of course I'm ready to go to work. Ugh. And so they sort of like walk past the dance studio and are instead going towards the training facility for the Jolly Ganders.
I've got a new line of fabric in. I think this is the ticket. You know how we were searching for something that was fitting of the way you
show it to me. Show it to me. Say less.
Like, we'll secret out of their jacket like this parcel and open it up. Describe the fabric that is fitting of the way that Jade moves.
Has sort of like a feather weavy like detail about it, and that when Maxwell kind of pulls it out, it hangs in the air for like a second longer than like any normal fabric would. As almost as if it's like it's being suggested to like rise more than fall. And it's like gold. It's got sort of like texture within it. It's very pristine looking, very beautiful. And it's like, oh, this is amazing. You genius. How can we incorporate this in a way that won't obscure a logo, but like maybe can work into my attire for this match? Maybe if we just simple, and we just have a scarf, and we maybe tease people in this next round, like what is this on her scarf, on her person? And then as we get further, we introduce it into an actual item.
Ah, work in layers. You discard to reveal. Jade, this is why I like working with you, that mind of yours.
See, and that is why I think that once we finally, I am finally rid of this profession of mine, I think we can actually get to the real meat of things, which is starting this clothing line. I think that we get big on the, we get big in the jousting stage, and then we transfer that to be, remain big in the clothing stage.
I would like to ask you, Tyler, I'm going to introduce a trouble for you.
Yeah.
And if you are willing, I got two pitches here. Either the material that your friend could have found for you might be actual golden feather weave, in which case, you know, as we've established in Skyjacks, it's not really feather weave traditionally, but it's something that the Red Feathers are trying to keep secret. So it's actually really dangerous for you to have. Or, as you pass this dance studio, one of your dance companions will see you walking toward the jousting area, and that could come back to bite you. So those are the two troubles that I have for you. Do you like either of them?
I like them both. I think we're going to go with someone seeing Jade as they sort of like walk by. And I think as they walk by the window of the dance studio, that's when Jade sort of really gets their hands on the feather weave. Mm-hmm. And so, or the fabric. And so they do like a little flourish and just like, oh, this is beautiful. And so very much calling attention to themselves without really noticing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly that. And I feel like this person inside the studio, like doing their pliés against the like handhold on mm-hmm. the mirrored wall, like the bit of gold passes in front of their face. And I'll ask John, describe this like venomously vengeful dancer who sees Jade.
Okay. This dancer is named I don't know why I was going to say Rihanna, but
it's Rihanna.
It's 100%.
A young Rihanna.
That's why you were going to say it.
That's why I was going to say it. She has always been the number two dancer to Jade.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Has seen Jade not showing up and is both absolutely overjoyed because it means that she gets to be the best, but also she never got the opportunity to show she was better than you.
Yeah. Yeah. Didn't get to actually legitimately earn that spot. And that, like, I think really culminates in this moment, seeing Jade walking around with this beautiful gold fabric. Like, it's been like watching Jade her entire life, where they have been walking around with this beautiful gift, where all of these things that were extremely difficult for Rihanna have come so easily to Jade over the years, thing after thing after thing. And now when Rihanna finally has something, it's only because Jade was disinterested in it. And like, we could see that darken in her face, as I think that's the end of this scene that could be scene or could be vignette, whatever we have. And once again, we are framing one scene and one like vignette type thing.
Well, if Jade is heading to the practice grounds already, we can have the camera then zoom ahead of them to the practice grounds where Skeen already is mounted on Royal, his Peregrine Falcon, and they are doing speed tests. And it's a target shoots up into the air and he flies forward as fast as he can with his lance out and hits it and then speeds back to the starting position.
Okay.
Move it back 20 meters again.
The way that I have this pictured is this is like sporting clays being fired into the air, except they're intending you to hit these things with a lance on the back of a bird, which is so dope. I love this so much.
just fires one up. He nails it, goes back to starting position. Another 20 meters back again, and then speeds off. And again, while still in its arc before it begins to fall, hits it with the lance, speeds back 20 meters further back again, and continues doing this.
So this is a standard training procedure. It makes sense. The farther you move it back, the longer it has time to fall before you would be able to reach it. So it is like almost a suicide sprint, like endurance trial, both for your aim and nerves, and of course the bird's speed and endurance. Because this is a standard training practice, I think this is a great time for our coach to step in. So I would like a description of the coach of this team. Then, like, as you are shouting out like orders to your support staff in training, you can see your current coach is there. This is somebody who was like on the team when you were hired onto the team. They were part of what the Jolly Ganders used to be before they were bought and rebranded by the Flying Garnish Distillery. So you have been working with this person, and like, I want to say this is a man in his mid-40s. He's got like a salt and pepper hair. He looks extremely dashing. He's dressed low-key like a matador. Like, clearly, this is a person who's got a lot of protagonist energy, a lot of, like, I think, paternal wisdom that has, like, maybe kept you back from your darker natures as you have continued through these, like, trials of the teen years. And then somebody runs up to him, whispers something in his ear, and he's like, "What are you talking about? How could you say this to me? I am not fired. I am not fired. I quit. I quit." He dramatically throws his whistle down, and like the rest of the support staff that like this sporting clay machine that you are working with has to be incredibly complex. It's got to be on rails that they are like pushing this thing back. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk.
Yeah.
And like it takes so many people to operate it. Nobody is clear on what to do. What heralds the arrival of the new coach?
I think, well, one, it's fanfare. I literally think that from the back of the arena, there is a
it's still going. Yeah, it gets a little jazzy.
Yeah.
Another instrument's late.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, there's a little Spanish guitar
out of nowhere.
Oh yeah, it's literally okay. It begins as this fanfare, but it does end up being like an orchestra.
Yeah.
As more people come out, and what is supposed to be just a fanfare, 20 seconds, maybe less than that, 10, becomes a minute and a half.
Wait, I just remembered. I'm gonna be editing this. Thanks, Drew.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome.
That's my favorite. I love it.
Oh no.
And we're gonna do all the instruments now, Bobby McFerrin style. Mm-hmm.
If you can, James, I'd like Josh Groban to come in and and do some vocals for this as well.
I cannot, but great.
Hey, we can dream. And all this fanfare happens, and then steps forward the coach from behind a red curtain that is set up just before.
Can you please describe the person who sets up the red curtain, Allie?
Yes. Actually, I think we've left it really vague.
We have left it really vague. Okay.
This is a narrow-featured person with, let's say, sort of a strategically haphazard mess of, like, light brown to dark blonde hair, like coiffed, but it looks messy, but it's coiffed. And they are wearing what appears to be a very starched, very tailored uniform that if you look at it long enough, it will become clear to you exactly what kind of uniform this is. This person runs out and erects like a folding, rolling like wardrobe rack, but it's a little bit taller than a wardrobe rack would be. And then latches onto it painstakingly while the orchestra is playing. Each each little rolling hook onto the top bar of this rack, and then hangs from those hooks a red velvet curtain with golden fringe, and unfurls the whole curtain across the rack, steps back, judges it, adjusts the fringe so that it's falling straight, like hand gestures to indicate, yes, this is perfect, and then scuttles around the backside of the curtain to elaborately whisper to the coach that the time is now.
Sky Jost. Sky Jost.
It's now?
Yes, yes, it's right now, sir.
Through here?
Yes, right now, sir.
Right now?
Yes, it's your cue, sir. Yes.
This doesn't. It's two on two.
No. Just go. No, it's, you're good. I promise.
And he steps around the other side.
Sir.
Hello, I am Phileas Youngblood, here to become the greatest coach of this sport. What sport is this?
It's jousting, sir.
Jousting that has ever been. Eustace.
Yes, sir.
My things.
Yes, right away, sir. And Eustace immediately begins unlatching the curtain hook by hook, and then folding it, and then refolding the rack, and then getting it out of the way, and then fetching two like leather valise bags.
And the umbrella.
And the umbrella, yes. And then runs back and grabs the umbrella and like a special hat and like a bunch of like a hat box and runs after Mr. Youngblood.
What we see is Phileas Youngblood. He is probably in his mid-20s, maybe a little older. He has obviously dark hair. Like, his hair is obviously dark brown, but it has been bleached to be blonde. It's been a little while, so you can see the roots in it. Mm-hmm. He has the hair is perfectly coiffed in a beautiful pompadour style. He has these mustaches that curl into perfect circles at the edges and a very pointed Van Dyke-esque beard. He is wearing beautiful clothes that you should not wear to a jousting pitch. That are in golds and purples. He has very tall boots. The insignia of the Youngblood is festooned on various different parts of his body. He has a cape that is draped over only one shoulder that has that on it as well. As he slowly makes his way down every step or so. I imagine these steps are like a stadium steps where you step down and have to walk like 2 or 3 feet and then go down, mm-hmm. and walk 2 or 3 feet and then go down. And so every time he steps down, Eustace goes forward, puts out like a mm-hmm. carpet mm-hmm. that he has to slowly walk across and then go down.
And then Eustace scuttles around to catch up and go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as he's going down, he is pontificating in a speech. But as he's continuing to talk, the camera switches back to where everyone on the shot put a mechanism, and they can't hear him. He's too far
right.
away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
His voice is just very small.
It's just very like... Mm-hmm.
And Skeen, in light of this display, I'm counting this entrance as a trouble for you. So I'm granting you a fight token here. And I kind of think, like, as this fanfare is unfolding, this is probably Skeen being an athlete who is in the middle of a groove is just like, I'm going to restart the exercise, I think, and run it normally one more time.
The second this happens, Skeen holds up the hand signal that means to stop, just in case the clay shooters get too far away to hear you. There are a signal that you can give, and looks just absolutely furious and begins to stalk over there, and then realizes that it's someone rich enough that he cannot tell them off. But also too late to stop walking towards them. It's like, oh no, I started walking over there. I have to keep going. And he composes himself, puts on his best practiced smile, and walks over. Ah, oh, hello. Yes, and who do I have the pleasure of meeting?
Eustace?
Yes, sir.
Which is this one?
One moment, sir. And Eustace drops all of the bags and then reaches into one of the bags and pulls out a clipboard,
and rifles through page after page after page after page on top of this clipboard, and then says, and squints at the page, and then squints at Skeen, and then squints at the page again, and then says, I believe this is Skeen Lightwind, sir? Well, I'm pronouncing that right. Skeen?
Yes.
Skeen Lightwind, sir.
Ah, yes. Young Skeen. I've looked over your portfolio, my young lad. You shall do great things. And just walks right past him.
Yes, I know I will. I still didn't quite catch your name.
Ah, yes, of course. I am Phileas Youngblood. I'm sorry. It's a bit of an athletic type, aren't we? You may call me Coach.
Very good. Coach?
Coach.
Welcome.
Youngblood. I like that. I like that a lot.
Very good, sir.
Of course, Coach Youngblood. And it's wonderful to see that you've got such an eye for talent that you already know how indispensable I will be and how wonderful we already are. In fact, if you would like, I can show you just how wonderful our drills are already.
Oh, absolutely. Let's see it.
That's so exciting, sir.
Eustace, yes. Please, my chair and the umbrella.
Right away, sir. And drops the clipboard into a bag, reaches into another bag, pulls out a folding chair, and pops the chair open to allow Mr. Youngblood to sit, and then reaches into, picks up the umbrella, pops the umbrella, and sets it directly into the pitch so that Phileas can sit down.
And Skeen gets back on Royal and just calls out, all right. Fourth position, restart, and go. And does the trials again where he keeps moving it 20 meters back, smashes the pigeon, comes back again, and keeps doing these quick flying sprints.
I say, Eustace.
Yes, sir.
Oh, do you have the thingy, the cone, the thingy cone?
I'm sorry?
The amplify my voice cone.
The which one, sir?
The cone, the one that amplifies my voice.
Oh, the talkie cone, sir.
Yes, the talkie cone.
Yes, right away, sir. And reaches into a bag and pulls out a collapsible megaphone, mm-hmm. and then like pops the megaphone open. Right away, sir. Here you go.
Yes, indeed. Young Skeen.
I don't know if he can hear you, sir.
I'll do it louder. Young Skeen.
Right as Skeen is about to hit another one of the clay targets, yes. That voice amplifies and he misses it and it falls to the ground, and you can see Royal and him whip around and fly down.
Yes, you missed that one. Do it harder.
Yes.
Oh no.
Team, reset. 10th position.
Yeah, like
make it 11.
Everybody who operates the device is like mm-hmm. looking around, and they look to Skeen because there's no 11th position. It goes up to 10.
What's he say?
Yeah.
He said 11. What?
And he makes the hand signal for 10th position and then goes back. Yes, of course, 11th.
Yeah, everyone like kind of shrugs and moves the device, sets it in place, and begins the sequence.
Yes, I like this a lot, Eustace. Write that in my notes. 11th position.
Sir. Right way, sir. Yes, you're really taking to this, sir.
I am. Oh, is this a whistle? And he reaches down and picks up this whistle that's on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I think I'll hold on to this.
So yeah, it's mid-sequence, like the pigeon goes up, like they have tried to angle it so that it will go to the highest position that it can go, which Skeen, this is a legitimate, you know, challenge. Like this is the farthest out it can go. They are now angling it to go higher. This is really good practice. How do you...
Oh, do more than one!
I think... Oh, yeah. They very quickly load up a second. So now it's gone from a legitimate challenge to cartoon nonsense town.
Oh, no. Make it three. I like threes. Write it down.
Three. Right away, sir.
So as you are flying towards it, more pigeons are going up.
The idea that Eustace just wrote down the number three.
That's correct. That is 100% correct. Most of the notes are just numbers and words, like one syllable words.
The people operating the device, like, they can't even hear these commands. They're just like, a guy like that's going to ask for three. So we're shooting three.
So the first one, Skeen manages to get there, just hits it before it gets to a point where he wouldn't be able to on the arc, and then sees like one more go up on his left side and another on the right, and he would have to pick one to go after, and he wheels on the one that faces him towards the audience, and specifically, instead of jousting his lance through the pigeon, hits it towards Phileas.
Yeah, like, it, and you know, these are clay pigeons. If nobody has ever done that particular type of sport, it is a very brittle ceramic. I imagine for jousting, these are much larger. So it's like relatively lightweight, but something that on that scale would shatter into a lot of pieces. These aren't necessarily dangerous, but like they ruffle you. They it lands in like a very dramatic splash.
Oh yeah, given that Skeen is the type of rich person that's like, oh, if someone gets any amount of like dirt or schmutz on my outfit, I will be incensed. This isn't I want to harm Phileas, it's I want clay dust on his outfit.
All I need to ask is, Eustace, how do you protect me?
With the umbrella. I think at the Eustace has just finished writing down the number 3 on the page, and then here's here's the hit take place, drops the clipboard, yanks the umbrella out of the ground, and swings it around in a defensive maneuver to have the clay particles and dust splash against the big beach umbrella and fall to the ground before Eustace shakes it off and then places it back into the ground.
Can I ask, is it like, does it look clumsy or does it look like professional? Because I feel like Eustace could be like, a secret
ninja.
Yes. That is just this way. I don't know.
Every part of it. Great question. Love to answer it. I think every part of the maneuver looks like a mess and an accident and a fumble, except for the part where he swings the umbrella down in front and then swings it back up. That part looks like a weapon.
Yes.
And then it's back to, oh, terribly sorry. The umbrella fell. Puts it back.
Eustace, there's a bit of dust on my shoulder.
Oh, terribly sorry, sir. I'll fetch the brush, shall I?
Oh, yes, please.
Get the little brush out. Brush on the sleeve.
Keep going. You missed that one.
You've somehow acquired a beverage in this time as well. Mm-hmm. Eustace did that with the other hand.
He's working at 45%?
I don't know, sir. You've got a much better eye for this than I do, sir.
I do. Okay. Let's call it 65, then.
And I think practice continues to unfold this way. Perfect. Great. I would like to see a scene now centered around Vercingetroy.
You should just call him Verse.
Verse. I know I should, but I do know how.
It's Vercingetorix.
Vercingetorix. Okay.
But I'll just call him either Verse or Gull.
All right. Yeah. A scene focused around Verse, and it doesn't need to be a dialogue scene. This can be a vignette scene that, you know, tells us where Verse is at and what their life is, you know.
Absolutely, sure. We can do either way. What I had envisioned was, because we did a complicated cut from the first scene to the second, in this case, we'll just pan up from the arena, which I assume is open to the sky.
Yeah.
And see the weirdest ship in all of Spear. Because it doesn't have wings. It has a big gas bag. It's a blimp ship. And sort of zoom in on that and then cut to it. And that's where Verse is. He's at bartending practice with his mentor, Shots. And he is behind the bar making a couple of drinks for a few assembled people. They can be whoever you want. Obviously, Shots is there.
Here's a question about Shots.
Yes.
Is Shots visible to the people in this room? Has Verse ever seen Shots?
Yeah. Is there a reason why he wouldn't?
Well, there are no mantis people in this world.
Oh yeah, he's gotten used to it.
This would be the okay.
This is his teacher.
Okay. Okay. So like that would be
other people might be completely terrified.
Yeah, that would be a horrific revelation for most people. So like the idea that Verse has acclimated to this sort of thing, I kind of think if this is something that is being done for a group of people, it is either other people who are from Vespia or Shots is currently silhouetted behind like a screen.
That's fine.
And that's how Shots is like judging this. So we have this figure who is mysteriously behind a screen who is ostensibly like watching. And I think there is like maybe a periscope or like opera glasses type contraption that Shots is able to watch your progress on that will mirror our anime opening, just shining lights in the darkness. But the other people who are there, I think this is like, this is probably something, these are like maybe a fan event where these are high paying fans of the Jolly Ganders have paid for like a private bartending session with Verse.
So Verse is busy mixing up some of the more basic alchemical concepts and drinks. He's making a round of forget-me-shots and a couple of bubble waters. As he serves them out, people will take them. The bubble waters are perfectly fine. A few people take a drink from them. As they pull them down from their mouth, bubbles come flying out of their mouth, heading towards the ceiling and then popping dramatically in little bursts of color.
Yeah, and it's this sort of thing where you can see the abject delight of these wealthy socialites as they are doing this thing that is a little bit undignified, but so unique. Something that you can't get anywhere else. And here they are, drinking, being served by an up-and-coming jousting champion. I think maybe in the back bar, like, there are the cups that you have already won this year. We have established that your team won a competition that one of the rival teams that you're going to be facing off against in this competition was also participating in. What does the trophy look like from that competition?
Ooh, if we've already won it, it can't be specific to us. So let's go ahead and say that it's a magnificent cresting whale bursting up from the bottom of the trophy case. There's around the whale, there are a bunch of correctly scaled to the size of it models of individual jousters attached via pin.
That's cool.
So the cup probably involved whales in some way, or was at least named after them.
Yeah, yeah. Yes. Like I think it's like the Leviathan cup or something like that. And it's sort of like a bad boy thing because like the sea and imagery of the sea is extremely taboo. So I think this is like a black glass whale that is emerging from like a silver cup. It is this really, really dramatic looking thing that looks incredibly intimidating on your shelf. And I would like to see in this little vignette for Verse something of Verse's relationship with this craft. Is Verse concentrating very hard on mixing this? Yep. Does this look effortless? What's going on?
In fact, as I was saying, the bubble water works perfectly fine. A couple of people in the group are drinking and little bubbles are coming out of their mouths. The other people received forget-me-shots, which is a fairly common drink in alchemy. The idea behind it is that you forget the last 30 seconds of your life after you take a shot of it. The idea is that you can hear a joke twice. But all of the people who take the forget-me-shots suddenly get very worried, anxious, inward-looking. A number of them push the drinks away from them dramatically. And as this happens, there's a bell noise, and Verse heads over towards the silhouette display that's hiding Shots from them and kind of looks contrite. His head bends down a little bit. He listens for a moment. He starts to protest, but then just bends down again as someone shuts him off. It turns out he's mixed this one incorrectly because he wasn't paying any attention. His head was somewhere else. Instead of making them forget the last 30 seconds, He made them all remember the most embarrassing thing they did in sixth grade.
Mm. Oh, rough. An absolutely rough shot. I think you are getting this. And like, there's something, I think the way the silhouette of shots behind this curtain plays out with like the shifting light of the clouds coming in from the side of the ship and whatnot, it very emotionally, we can't hear what Shots is saying, but like seeing hints of the shape and form of Shots through the mm-hmm. screen, it looks like almost like you were talking to a demon. And I think it's something that like titillates and frightens the people in the room with you. But we can see that, you know, clearly Verse is looking directly at this person and not concerned by it. And then I think there is a sounding of, I guess this ship is a Vespian ship. So probably instead of bells, there's like a horn or something,
that is
alerting, essentially like implying that you are being called away to practice after doing this, bartending demo. So, you know, you're asked to like take off your apron and get moving along. I just want to know, knowing that they have made a mistake, and like this is the sort of thing where it maybe in training is to be expected, but in a showcase like this, probably the stakes are a little bit higher. How mm-hmm. is Verse feeling about this?
Verse is a mix of defiant and contrite at the moment. He had attempted to argue his case with Shots that he doesn't need to do the homework or the studies. He's already a prodigy in his field. He's amazing. And Verse just said, the proof is in the pudding. You've failed these people. He didn't do his homework because he was off doing something else. Verse is nothing less than just fully unchecked, unmedicated ADHD.
Mm-hmm.
if he isn't doing the things he's focusing on, he's just doing whatever at any given moment. And in this moment, he feels that sting of failure that comes from knowing you forgot something a while ago. And there's nothing you can do about it now.
Yeah. Oof.
Been there, buddy.
So I think that is a good end to that scene. So we've had, I'm on the fence as to whether Jade's scene was a scene or a vignette. I think Skeen's scene was definitely a scene. I am going to frame a scene because I feel like it is necessary. I would like to see these three in a situation where they can talk to each other that is unobserved by people that they are beholden to. Where does that take place?
Do we have a mixed gender locker room?
I mean, definitely.
Okay,
great. Dope.
This is the past. And also, this is more importantly, Windrider Island, where probably a lot of those hangups don't exist.
They would never have enough locker rooms for all the genders.
Yeah. There are too many genders for everybody to have their own locker room.
Just a room. That's
real quick. Drew, your character's name was Phineas or Phileas?
Phileas.
Phileas. All right, cool. I feel like there's like Jade probably strolls into the locker room, kind of like takes their duffel that has all of the dancing accoutrement and equipment that and her shoes and all the stuff that she will never use, and just like plops it on, like basically just throws it at the door, and just kind of very, very like graciously, but then like looking back at the direction that they just came in, is like, why is Phileas Youngblood? Why did Phileas Youngblood say hello to me as I walked into the room, into the building?
Oh, and you can see that Skeen, having already mm-hmm. done a lot of work today, is, you know, jacket off, like hand against a locker and sort of forehead pressed against it. And as soon as you talk, just slowly turns to regard you.
Oh.
Have they ever seen Skeen like this before?
Every other coach has essentially been able to be cowed by Skeen.
Mm.
He comes from a wealthy family and is also very dominant in personality and would normally just run roughshod over whoever they sent in, even if they were good. And if they were very good, he wouldn't have to.
Mm-hmm.
Phileas, however, is neither thing that he can deal with. That Coach Youngblood.
Coach?
New coach.
Coach Youngblood has opinions on how we should joust.
And I think at that, Jade burst fully into laughter. The untroubled child is our new coach. The Youngbloods can't find a place for the black sheep, so they put him to be our leader. He told me to find my rider's spirit on my way in. I don't know what that means.
He sent the clay team to 11th position.
Please, there is no 11th position. Shut up.
I can't do it.
Okay. And so I think at that, Jade like claps twice and like takes off maybe her shawl that she was wearing, puts it in her locker, and then goes to sort of change into her practice uniform. Well, how long do we think that this will last?
Could have been predicted.
Predicted?
Failed. Please. Son of a big empire. Need something. By the way, throughout all of this, Versus perched on top of one of the lockers. Like a tiny crow.
Yes.
attempting to drop single drops from a flask he's carrying into a martini glass he set on the floor.
Couldn't he just take to drink like everyone else like he is?
Has taken to drink. Makes him predictable.
And at that, just stops and looks up to you. Has he taken to drink? And then looks at the thing that you are dropping drops into?
Indeed. Already planning new recipes.
Oh, Verse. I can always count on you.
Mm.
Talk about you are predictably reliable. By the way, is this for human consumption or... And Jade is pointing at the glass.
Straight grain spirits. Target practice.
Okay, I will leave you to be. So, 11th position. What did you actually end up doing?
I just motioned to the team to go to 10th and then said, obviously, we were at 11th. Thankfully, Phileas knows less than I even thought he did. So, I suppose, humor him? I need to have a talk with the rest of the team when he's not around, so everyone's on the same page.
My tolerance for another head coach trying to wing it with us is fleeting. I will try, though.
I think as you say that, I feel like... A technology that feels Vespian to me, whether it has ever been established or not, is vacuum tubes.
Oh, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Pneumatics.
There's a pneumatic tube that like, thump. There's a scroll in it that carries the lists, which is the matchups for this tournament. And also the announcement of like, who is advancing. So... You get the information that you are going to be facing off against the Crimson Flash in your next match. And you can also see the victory announcement of the quarterfinals that the Frog Princes have succeeded in their match and advanced despite, like, I think, like, this will give you bare bones information, like, there was a disqualification in on their team, like for the match. It looks like it was very dramatic and they barely got over the lists. But like, once again, the reigning champions of this tournament are going to be in the quarterfinal position or the semifinal position.
Huh. A disqualification. Interesting. I wonder what for.
Yeah. Is there any kind of like detailing of who it was or what happened?
Yeah, you know, we'll say that there was a, this is one of the quarterfinal matches where magic is allowed use on the field. That was like part of the agreement. However, it caused a firearm to backfire, which could seriously injure somebody. And because of that, the rider was disqualified from that tournament. Like, they'll be able to return to the next match, but like, this is something that like tells the story of somebody who did something very desperate to try and win and overstepped a line.
Someone's getting desperate. I like these odds.
That means they'll pull out all the stops this time. I do feel like they were holding back, and I'd love to, you know, crush them at their best.
Absolutely. You know it's going to be prime time viewing. Everyone is going to be talking about it. Oh, we are going to get eyes on us, aren't we? And I think they're saying that, Jade has like floated up to basically her tippy toes on that. It's like they are on another level. Ooh, we are going to be famous.
Could put feelers out.
Yeah. Do we have any way to see what's going on with them then?
Yes, if they're going to arrive on the island.
Wouldn't be bad to keep an eye on them.
I know a weakness in their informational defenses.
Excellent.
Genuine question.
Yeah.
Ostentatious flop coach, no coach, which is preferable?
I think they're almost one and the same, but no coach would probably be better.
No coach, very similar. Coach that can't see to the end of the glass.
Excellent.
Ooh.
Rainy sidewalk lit by street light. Everybody stayed at home. But I am walking through the storm. My hands are cold, my heart is warm, and I will not spend another day. Promise we'll be friends when the summer comes again.
In the universe of Star Wall Odyssey, space is made out of the collective imaginations of all the thinking beings who live on various planets. These worlds are connected to each other through imagination. Common themes and ideas are strings between universes. And to get between them, people fly wooden ships that look like animals, which are powered by emotions. Also, people communicate with each other by contemplating orbs. The only way you can take pictures is getting stared at by a big psychic bug. And people have already declared victory in a war over the very concept of evil. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Star Wall Odyssey follows the adventures of the hapless inhabitants of the Lucky Finn tenement building, who suddenly find that their apartment is actually a spaceship, and that they're lost in a sea of boundless imagination. It's an actual play starring me, James D'Amato, Mel D'Amato, Ali Grauer, and Drew Merzieski, as we playtest the No Kings system, which will hopefully one day be the Skyjacks role-playing system. It toes the line between weird and wonderful slice of life and high-flying space fantasy. You can sample the first 5 episodes by searching for Star Wall Odyssey on your favorite podcast app, or get the whole thing by heading to patreon.com/oneshotpodcast and signing up for $5 a month or more.